Hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Hey, Kate, how are you? You look like you're in a cozy location, very appropriately.
I am in dark, but cozy, yes. Helsinki at the moment for Slush, which is a annual conference that is held obviously in the beginning of the Helsinki winter. So it's an effort to bring some light into the dark, I guess, with inspiring talks and speakers and side events and pitching competition.
And Slush kind of is designed to describe what the kind of weather is usually like, isn't it?
Yeah. So far, we don't have any snow here,
no.
Which I actually don't mind.
It was last year. There was definitely a lot last
time. It was very slippery.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy with it. But yeah, so far, so good.
Because a Danish has that, I can never know how to pronounce it, but that
hygge
thing about like coziness. Does Finnish have any of that? Do you know? I don't think so.
I think it's all of them.
Okay. Yeah.
Most of Scandinavia has that approach, I think.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. The Nordics, you know, it's not really that revolutionary or unusual. It's really just about,
staying warm, but it's cold and miserable.
I mean, it's about, instead of saying, oh, I'm so depressed, it's dark.
Yeah.
It's saying, well, put the fairy lights up,
Yeah.
Light a candle, make some mulled wine or tea or whatever. Just, make the best of it, which I think is a pretty good attitude. It's very easy to
stay out. The only attitude you can have.
But I think you can turn it into something great.
Yeah. All right then. Well, we are back with another Tech Lounge deep dive. I think the last two episodes got some interesting feedback, actually. The advantage sometimes of doing a few inside baseball topics is when you are at an event, people actually come up to you and say, oh, I listened to the show, which is, it's weird because the number of years I've done shows wanting people to listen, but you almost never expect anybody to. And when someone tells you they did, you still are surprised. So today we're going to talk about, I think you said circularity from your end.
Mm-hmm. I will explain.
Yeah. And I would like to talk about the current crop of microblogging social networks and how to decide what to do and where to go, I think. Mm. So let's flip a coin, Kate. Who would like to go first? Heads or tails?
Heads.
It's heads. Do you want to go first then? Okay. So circularity. What on earth is that, Kate?
When we talk about circularity, we're talking about a principle of that comes right back to the when we design something. Mm. So when we design a product, for example, and that may be fashion, like textiles, it might be an electronic product. We're all aware of e-waste. So I won't go into that too much. I'm looking at other forms of circularity. Or it can be things like, what's another example? Packaging is another one, I guess. And so I guess what we're talking about is how do we reduce the environmental impact of a product?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A product, how do we extend its lifestyle? How do we minimize the waste it generates? How do we create economic opportunities through innovation? For example, giving something a second life or making a side stream product, which means we create a new product out of a waste product.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, what we call the circular economy. And the reason I think this is interesting is it really is it's a pretty intrinsic part of tech at the moment, or startups, if you like. And it goes back into that sort of novel innovation where it could be anything like turning forestry waste, for example, from a pine tree or some type of tree in a forest into an oil, which could be used as an alternative to palm oil.
Yeah.
So it gives that, the waste product is the oil, it becomes an oil and it has additional good because it's replacing a harmful oil like palm oil, which we know is responsible for massive amounts of deforestation and loss of biodiversity and biohabits in parts of Asia.
Can I ask a very quick question? Just on terminology, because I used to be involved in the sustainability movement in the past. Is this just a new word for the circular economy? Is that kind of the same thing, or
it's it's the rethink, reduce, reuse, recycle.
Okay, Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it uses the same logo, if you like.
Yeah. And of course, ironically, this is sort of things that people used to do more in the past before massive industrialization. Like, I think the classic example for me is the old school brewing industry that makes a lot of alcohol not vegan, when they would use enzymes from a fish stomach to filter out the yeast. And traditionally that probably came from the fishing industry just down the road.
Well, like one I'm seeing a lot of lately, which makes me laugh a little bit, which is using, I guess, side stream products from breweries. Yep. So the yeast extract to turn into things, which as an Australian is pretty funny because that's how we make Vegemite, which everyone knows is our national treasure.
Marmite in the UK, and there's all sorts of
But I wanted to look at some slightly different examples that people might not really think about that, you know, shows how big this movement is and that it is like inherent to the future of sustainability. For example, NL Comp, which is an Italian company. And they basically focus on R&D and recyclable composites. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about is fiberglass boats. So there's this big problem with fiberglass boats in that the bits that, you know, when the boat is finished its lifespan, can't be reused. Yep. And so this company is creating the very first recyclable boat, which includes different types of plastics as an alternative to traditional resins. So it means that when they need to end the life of the boat, they can recycle it. So they can break it down. They can break those composites down.
Yeah. That's interesting, because my observation on metal boats and planes is they're not necessarily recycled, but they're definitely reused a lot. If you ever look at a plane too closely, you'll notice there's lots of like patches of metal where they've rebolted over things, and I imagine it's similar on boats, but I guess with fiberglass, you can't do that. It's just one solid structure. It's not bits of structure that get assembled.
Yeah, exactly. And another company I wanted to mention, which is probably one of my favorite stories I wrote this year just for fun, which is called Sorterbrick. Mm-hmm. It's a Lithuanian startup, and it basically has an AI-powered Lego brick sorting service. So what it does, you know, is it reduces waste and offers a cost-effective way for families to reuse their old Lego connections. Basically, it
sounds like a niche use case.
That's a lot of Lego, apparently. There's a lot of Lego that just sits in boxes. Okay. And so it cleans them, it sorts them, it repackages it, and sort of gives a second life to the Lego.
There is,
and it, I think it's a great idea.
Lego itself has an app, I think, called Rickit, where you can take a photo of something and it will show you the bits you can use to make that, or something like that, I think.
Yeah, but this is for people who have Lego they don't use.
Okay.
So it's a slightly different market. And they got just over $1 million in October for funding, which is very nice for that use case. Let's see what some other examples I can share with you. There's so many examples. Bicycle is a really interesting one. They're basically, some of these sound so obvious until you look at the fact that they didn't exist.
Yeah.
And this is a marketplace for secondhand kids' bikes.
Okay, yeah.
So pre-owned bikes. Sorry, Bicycle is the premium bikes, because the people that developed the platform realized that there was this situation where you're buying these very expensive bikes and there's this slightly dodgy thing where, you know, I don't want to be carrying around this wad of cash to, you know, get a secondhand bike. Like, it sounds kind of scary and a bit dangerous, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they created a platform that was able to facilitate a lot of that. There's also Aeropowder, who is creating feather-based thermal packaging for packaging goods. Mm-hmm. And as it is what it sounds like, it's thermal packaging from feathers, and it replaces expanded polystyrene. So we know the polystyrene that we see in people's bins, because it's hard to get rid of, it works as an alternative.
But
to that.
In that particular case, I mean, the challenge with a lot of these sort of circular economy things is to actually make it truly circular. So in the example that you just mentioned there of using feathers, but where do those feathers come from?
Chickens.
But okay, so let's be more specific. Where were those chickens? Like, what were those chickens used? What was the rest of the chicken used for? Was it used for, like, it wasn't
food.
I mean,
food, basically.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's kind of what
chickens
I mean.
That have come from a factory, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So it's,
that's kind of what I just wanted to clarify.
From farm, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, and then at the other end, you have things like fashion, you know, Vinted, and who raised a massive round earlier this month. There's a bunch of those different alternatives. And I think basically it's part of a bigger trend. We're starting to see where companies are embedding these practices into not only their existing sort of platforms or their existing business model, but new.
Yeah.
And the next era, if you like. And there's a few reasons for that. The first one is that there are regulatory compliance issues. So it's this kind of carrot and stick. And I often ask people about this when I interview them. I say, look, you know, is it the carrot or stick? Like, what's been most successful in these kind of areas? Yeah. Everyone says it's unfortunately the stick.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
You would kind of think, yeah, that'll work. But no, it doesn't. People like, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
digging a little bit more into where I was kind of going with my question, have you seen any examples of these sort of circular economy products or startups that have been not really very circular? You know, in that, you know, in my mind, the definition is that you should be using the waste of something else. You should be reusing the waste of something else into something new, that kind of thing. But there have been examples, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but maybe you'll know some, of companies that say this, but really actually they're just another kind of creating something out of something that didn't really need to be used in the first place.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's that kind of greenwashing,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That we've all
exactly.
seen in sustainability, you know, it's like the, you know, carbon credits, plant a tree, and then you discover that they're just planting the same tree in the same forest, right?
Yep.
But, I mean, there are different ways you can approach this whole issue. Like another one is, which sounds to some people might sound a bit ridiculous, but it's digital-only clothing. So the idea is that a lot of
digital
that
only. Did I hear you correctly?
Development can happen using digital samples.
Okay. Yeah.
So instead of, and I've seen a few things in this space. So the idea, everything from, you know, tailors where people used to walk around with these massive books of bits of fabric to, you know, literally digital fashion houses where, you know, they will tie this in with NFTs in some respects, but not all of it. But I think it's just, you know, thinking of different ways to approach this. There's also things like developing software so that companies can actually create their own rent and reuse services for their clothing, for example.
Yeah.
So that, you know, people can actually, you know, there's a way that you can pick, you can package, you can sort, you can do the returns, all that sort of stuff. Refurbishing, how do you resell those, you know, secondhand products?
Yeah.
And I think that's the bit where probably a lot of companies are trying to do it, but it's a bit sad. Like if you go to even Zalando or C&A has a section in their physical stores, or maybe ASOS or a bunch of the other stores, they will be offering a second life clothing, and it's often not very much.
Yeah.
It may be, you know, a bit sad because it just lacks that range. So I think it hasn't necessarily taken on yet.
Okay.
I think once they bring, maybe they subvert that business model a little bit more so that there is more of a value add for people that what am I trying to say? Yeah, people that, you know, trade in your clothing and you get a discount on your new clothing.
Yeah.
Another example we've seen a lot of in Europe, particularly Germany, is sneaker repair. And this comes back to it as well when we talk about circularity. Sneaker repair, there's Repair Rebels, which has basically created a digital platform to connect people with tailors and shoemakers and these kind of people who can repair things like luxury handbags or, you know, leather shoes or belts or what have you, or jewelry. Because originally they're just some person in a shop at the back of a shopping center or something, or, you know, you don't know they're there. And, you know, having a platform where you can post things.
Yep. Can I, because I have so many follow-up questions I want to ask you. I don't want to forget them.
Please, go for it.
The first one is a statement that there is now, I think in Germany, if not Europe-wide, that fund to help you get things repaired, I think.
Yes, that's correct.
I think it's like, it's not a massive amount, but it's a start.
It's a couple hundred, I think. You get, just to clarify for the listeners,
like $50 or
basically you get, I guess, a grant, if you like, to get your electronics repaired by going to a special, one of the, I think they're largely volunteer-led, trained volunteer, qualified volunteers, repairs like fixing a blender or something.
The irony being, of course, so many modern devices are completely unfixable. But you had an issue recently with water on a laptop, and it's like,
I'm looking. I actually asked the Apple Store about that, and they were just like, "Yeah, we can't."
Modern computers are just like, I mean, on the opposite side of things, I am trying to upgrade, maintain a coffee grinder, and that's from a company that makes everything user serviceable. User serviceable is a broad word, because whilst it is possible for me to replace almost every part in this, it's not easy, but it is possible. You know, I would say possibly our grandparents' generation were the last generation we remember where you could almost always go and like, do you know how to fix this? And they would have a bunch of tools somewhere and take things apart and fix them. I remember my grandfather even still thinking he could do that with modern devices, and kind of like, no, it's not how it works anymore, unfortunately.
And I think for a lot of people, it's access. I mean, these are often skilled, like when you get down to it, these are often skilled professions,
That was actually going to be my next question.
Your shoes or something, you know?
That was going to be my next question to you, actually. You mentioned, and then I have one to go back to, but just as you said it, you know, you mentioned this aspect of like putting in touch with shoemakers and tailors and repairers. But you just made a very good point there. The sad fact is, there's not that many of these people anymore. So just because you want to connect them, where do we fit that shortage, that skill shortage?
Yeah. I think a couple of ways. Yeah. I think putting it into the public space, like I know pop-up stores, like the sneaker repair shops are dedicated to sneakers, and they get kind of, they make it kind of cool, and, you know, they clean your sneakers and they change the laces and they resold them or what have you to do the inner bits. But, you know, and these are startups run by young people.
So
they're hiring young people or training young people to do it. Then you have stores that are having people in the stores who can, for example, take a hem up on some clothing or something like that. So I think this is a good point. And I think, I actually have asked people about this as well, because you have the reality of, for example, if I want to get my shoes fixed, finding someone who can do it, that it's convenient, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
There might not be that many people nearby.
I remember this.
When you're doing something like an on-demand delivery service, you're creating a way to do it that's, potentially going to create more jobs.
I remember this.
Assuming there's a training program aligned with that.
But firstly, listeners, I'm going to let you into a slight secret that not all of you will know. And this may surprise some of you. I don't know. Kate and I are actually married to each other as well. Shock horror, if you didn't realize already. I'm sorry to disappoint you. But
what does that mean?
Sorry to disappoint you if you didn't realize. We've been lying to you. But anyway, when we got married, I got a pair of shoes made by a little old gentleman, Italian shoemaker in the area of Melbourne we used to live in at the time, and not particularly expensive either. And I remember that when we went back a couple of years later, he was long gone. And there was a whole generation of the largely Italian shoemakers in Melbourne that I don't see any of them anymore. So, you know, it is unfortunate that these people do go. I find it interesting that, you know, he was very much making like brogues, leather shoes, things like that. I do find it interesting that you mentioned the new generation is more of like sneakers and things like that. So the skills are there. They're just
different, handbag, sneakers, I suppose. Like
Yeah, interesting. And the question I want to come back to when you were talking about the digital clothing, think back to 5 minutes ago, especially with the NFT aspect of things. Have any of these companies done benchmarking or assessment to identify whether their alternatives are actually better for the environment or not?
I believe so, yes. There are services that do that. I know there's a Swedish company.
Oh, there's services that do it, but have they done it?
I know a Swedish company has been working on that.
Okay. Because I often...
And a lot of it, they tie it into the whole supply chain, which is, you know, I didn't want to get too much into this because it's a massive topic, but it's everything from where you source the original materials to where they end up at the other end, you know, workers' rights, all that sort of stuff.
Because this has been playing on my mind a little bit recently with the sort of modern world of commerce. This is slightly off topic, but there used to be Germany, I would say, was a few years behind the kind of decline of the quote-unquote high street. I don't really know what else to call it outside of the Australian Anglosphere angle of the high street, but where you would go shopping. Germany is only really starting to get that now. It's a few years behind, whereas a lot of other European countries, I think, a lot of those big department stores and things were long gone. And this included earlier this year, there was an amazing 5-story music store not far from where I am speaking to you from called Just Music in Germany, in Berlin. Slowly whittled down to just this one flagship store. And then it closed down.
Even Conrad went, right?
But Conrad was like bits and pieces, fuses.
Like hardware meets electronics.
Yeah, actually a great store. And both of these were places that took up a tremendous amount of space. And I would argue a lot of people, went, especially in Just Music, went to basically use it like a showroom and they never bought anything there. So you wonder why it closed down.
How do you monetize that?
Yeah.
I imagine that's the case for a lot of businesses now.
But the point I wanted to get to was that, so I've been, now I'm like, well, I want to buy this thing, a drum thing, and it's not cheap. And previously I was like, well, I could go to Just Music and try them, try the different ones to see which one I like. And now I'm kind of like, well, what do I do? How do you try this stuff? And the only answer people have given me is, oh, well, you order them all and send them back.
Yeah.
And I kind of like, this doesn't feel, I find it hard to know, is a DHL person ferrying a package backwards and forwards to me twice, potentially, better for the environment than someone maintaining a store? I don't know. It's very hard to say.
I mean, you know, I guess you think, you know, stores, you've got cleaning, electricity, energy, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, yeah, and this has come up because people are using online
Zalando
stores,
like clothing stores
as change rooms, basically. Yep. Like I think ASOS now charges people, and I think Amazon as well, if you have repeat returns.
Yeah, there is usually a limit. I think Zalando is the same. Like they're pretty lenient, but I think it's over a certain financial amount, something like that.
I'll add with that, and there was a really good article in The Guardian, I think it was last few weeks. I'll find it. But remind me, I'll give it to you for the show notes, where they basically looked at what happens to those returned clothing. Because you or I might go, oh, well, you know, it goes back on the on the shelf and it's, you know, because you're not supposed to wear it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, maybe you get it in the sales, for example.
Yeah, a lot of it is just clearance.
A lot of it gets dumped
Microphone.
Developing countries.
This microphone was Beware. Actually, the audio interface I have was Beware from Amazon. I actually buy a lot of Beware, especially a lot of modern electronics. It generally is fine. You might have some battered packaging or a slight dent or something, but it makes no difference to anything. If you're prepared and can be flexible, you can actually get a lot of good deals. And this is where a lot of it ends up. It doesn't get repackaged. Well, maybe it does, but I don't know how they do it. But I've always been fascinated to know.
Well, they have to clean it.
Yeah, and that someone has sat down and done the numbers to make it still viable. That's the crazy thing.
Sometimes it's viable.
Yeah.
Hence what it is. But, I mean, yeah, this article went into it. They basically, the person went to one of those, I don't know what you call it. I mean, a clothing tip, you know, like an outdoor area which is full of clothing in one of the, I can't remember what country it is, hence I'm not mentioning it.
Yep.
And yeah, they looked at the labels and they're working, they found there's an NGO there that actually track the clothing based on the labels on the clothing.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest offender was Marks and Spencer.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm. And so it wasn't like Temu
No. That although maybe no one's done it for Temu because.
I think that they were second.
Okay.
you know.
So just on that viability aspect, to come back to the kind of the smaller scale startup you're an expert in. How do they remain viable? And also, I think in this space, probably one of the bigger issues for them is maintain their own supply. If something changes, a regulation changes or a supplier changes, and it means that they can't actually make their own product anymore. Like, have any of them done any?
I mean, I think it's a lot of this in these kinds of sectors run on partnerships and collaboration. Yeah. Like, and he's another example I was going to mention just very briefly is, I mean, it's Resortex, which is a company that basically is changing the thread that you find in clothing, like jeans, so it can be dissolved because traditionally it has to be unpicked and before the clothing can be recycled, which is this mammoth endeavor, as you can imagine, hence why we talk about those landfill of clothing. So it's those kinds of companies partnering with, you know, fabric makers and clothing makers, you know, building those alliances.
Yeah.
But I think it also comes down at some level to consumers wanting more sustainable clothing. I mean, that's.
Do they though?
This is what
this is my concern.
I think it's very easy to. I think there's a class element and there's a money element and there's a privilege element when we talk about, you know, access to ethical clothing and all that sort of stuff. And I think anything that we can do that encourages the big brands, all of them, to take responsibility rather than simply shaking our finger at anyone who doesn't buy from, you know, ethical brands.
Yep.
It can be a good thing, you know.
And
I don't think there's one approach to any of this stuff. I think it's, you know, startups are in a place where they can disrupt with technology, with, you know, actually literally at that, you know, that level of creating fabric, yep. for example, if we talk about clothing or shoes or something, you know?
I have this weirdest feeling like I've mentioned this before on the show, and I don't know when or why, but it just really reminds me of a very old, if you let me look up how old it is, because it's always nice to know how long people have been thinking about this. I mean, it's in black and white, so it already tells you. It is from 1951, my God. The Man in the White Suit with Alec Guinness. Obi-Wan Kenobi, as many people know him, unfortunately, is in an old Ealing comedy. Ealing made a lot of satirical films in the 50s and 60s, but he basically invents a material for clothing that doesn't degrade, doesn't need to be cleaned, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, the industry tries to shoot him down because this is not a business. So,
that movie, the documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car?
Yeah. I mean, that I think has fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, kind of dated now. But I think the clothing industry still wants cheap, trashy clothing. So,
well, the consumers do.
Yeah. Well both. Yeah. It's symbiotic, shall we say.
Absolutely.
So, Kate, just as a starting point for anyone interested in knowing maybe some of these more interesting circularity startups, any but you just want to very quickly mention for people who don't read show notes? Some of your favorites?
I think I mentioned a few already.
Okay. Just as a quick summary.
I would just put them in, the links. But a few off the top of my head would be Perfat Technologies for oils, Zampler in the UK.
Zampler.
NL Comp with the ships.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. There's some other ones I can think of. Resortex I mentioned, Repair Rebels, Seeker Rescue. There you go.
And if you live in Germany, check out that subsidy for getting things repaired, I suppose.
Yeah, which we'll also put in the show notes.
All right, let's take a, on the subject of buying things you don't need, let's take a quick ad break. This is end.
Oh, Chris, bad segue.
That's a brilliant segue.
Before we begin, there's just a few people at the door who've got some things they want to tell you. Then we can get stuck in. If you'd rather not hear these interruptions, then please support the show. You can find details in the episode and show notes.
So, Chris, we've talked about sustainability, we've talked about circularity. What do you want to talk about today in the lounge?
Well, you mentioned in passing The Guardian a few moments ago, and that's actually a nice segue in some respects because The Guardian sort of kickstarted a migration from X, Twitter, Twix to Blue Sky in the past few weeks. And I think this was already had been accelerated by the changes in American politics and its new ownership and a few other things. So I wanted to take this opportunity to have a little bit of a survey of the land of where we have been and where we are going with these kind of social media, microblogging. I don't really know where to, because I wouldn't necessarily think of LinkedIn or Facebook as the same boat as Twitter, Mastodon, Threads, Blue Sky, etc. I think they're slightly different. So I'm going to call them the microblogging platforms. That's sort of what Twitter was when it first began. Mm-hmm. And there were others back in the past, which actually, let's begin with some that came out a long time ago. Not completely microblogging, but LiveJournal. I think we're both old enough to remember LiveJournal. It was probably the first social network I was on, LiveJournal and MySpace. LiveJournal had a really fascinating story that I recommend a lot of people look into. It ended up being bought by... It ended up becoming a big hangout for Russian dissidents and then being bought by the Russian government. So I hate to say, all of your teen angst is now owned by the Russian government.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Gosh.
But let's fast forward a little bit to, so Twitter. Twitter, let's just have a quick recap of Twitter's history. It was created in 2006. So it's not even 20 years old, 18 years ago. I, Jack Dorsey, Noah Glass, Biz Stone, Evan Williams. I think Jack Dorsey is the main one people know, and he will come back to us shortly. It was probably one of the early breakout kind of tech companies, Web 2.0 companies. It has some fairly famous moments in history. It initially ran on Ruby on Rails, which is one of the things that gave Ruby on Rails a bad name, because if you remember the familiar fail whale, I don't think people have seen that for a long time, but there was always the fail whale. It raised a lot of money, but has never really made a lot, actually, despite its presence in the world, or should we say its past presence in the world. It has never actually made a lot of money. I have read many stories about its sort of heyday of, you know, of San Francisco tech, of when money was free-flowing and so was the booze and many other things. But it's never really been massively profitable, if at all. And then, of course, in more recent years, it was taken over by, acquired by Elon Musk in what many describe as a move he didn't really want to take, which...
That's a polite way of putting it.
No, and it kind of...
Shoot his mouth off and then he got caught.
I sort of wonder how many people who pressured him to take it over because they wanted the money now regret that, but...
All of them?
What could we say? Well, I don't know. Who knows? If you made a lot of money out of it, who cares, I suppose. But and it has kind of rapidly descended. I don't necessarily want to say downhill because I want to be inclusive of people's opinions and thoughts, but shall we say it has rapidly changed. It has changed from a sort of a place where people went to make and break and catch up with breaking news. It was always a very popular hangout with journalists, which is probably why it gets a lot more airtime and column inches than anything else.
We've all gone to Blue Sky, by the way.
You're jumping ahead here. You're jumping ahead. But, you know, it was always very popular with journalists. So yes. I think it got a lot more exposure than to a lot of your normal users would think was justified because of that. This is often the case. The people who make the news have a tendency to talk about what they use a lot. So, you know.
True.
I think both you and I have had our peak moments on it when we gained a lot of users. We both had reasonable followings. There were times when, you know, Twitter was a great place for spreading a message, networking, connecting. I got jobs through Twitter. I've met lots of people through Twitter. Still do to a certain extent, but it is not what it used to be, shall we say, I think is a polite way of putting it. Does that seem reasonable?
I think that's very restrained.
It is, yes. Now, let's talk about one of the others that is a little bit more vintage as the alternatives, because many people are now starting to look at the alternatives.
Mm.
The first one that is probably the next oldest is, I'm just double-checking my facts here. Yes, it is Mastodon.
Yeah.
Mastodon is very different. Mastodon was actually founded in Germany. It is Mastodon GmbH. By a German, Eugene Rochko.
That's correct.
Russian-born German software developer. Mastodon operates as a foundation. It has very minimal staff. I actually heard an interview recently with their head of marketing, and he works one day a week. So it shows you the size of the company. It's a non-profit. It is open source. It is self-hosted. It is federated along its own self-maintained protocol called ActivityPub, which means that it can kind of... Actually, in many ways, Mastodon is a pure representation of what things like blockchain were supposed to be, in my mind, and kind of failed. This sort of self-hosting, self-distributed, but can synchronize with the whole should it want to. And you can have Mastodon instances that just run in an isolation. You can have Mastodon instances that show messages, toots, I think it's called, from every other instance, et cetera, et cetera. One of the common things that is mentioned in terms of Mastodon is self-hosting is quite expensive. It's actually another Ruby on Rails application. It is probably one of the largest Ruby on Rails applications running now. I was told this at a Rails event, at a Ruby event recently. So it learned from where Twitter was, but kept going. It actually uses, I'm going to get into some nerdy tech here, it is actually using Ruby on Rails compiled into WebAssembly, which will get any tech person listening quite excited. What's been your impressions of Mastodon, Kate? I know you've looked at it. What's been your impressions of it?
There just wasn't enough people on it that I was networking with, to be blunt.
Why do you think that? Like, who do you think is on there and why are people, quote unquote, like you not there?
I think the fact that you're kind of corralled into different kind of pods, if you like, if I can use that term, or groups based on, you know, how the server you choose from memory. That was part of the problem. I think the complexity, I mean, it's not all that complex, but for a lot of people, the perception of the complexity was a big turnoff.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and it's been, and it's funny because there's been a lot of the Fediverse stuff. There's been, you know, a lot of attempts, particularly in Europe, to really disrupt that market. Yep. Like I think in Germany there was, because I can think of a few just because I wrote something about it last year. Pleroma? Did you know that one? Microblogging
site? I'm not sure, but there's a lot that attempt to use this. I've seen Meetup Alternatives. I've seen, yeah.
One I was going to ask you about actually was Diaspora.
Diaspora is, that is a,
like a markdown of Facebook.
That is a blast from the past. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was one of those ones that was crazy popular in Brazil for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, right.
Or was that a different one? But there was, yeah, let's have a quick look.
Yeah, I mean, I guess another question that I asked when I was writing about it, because I mea culpa, I had to do some research because I didn't know there were all these things.
So Diaspora doesn't use ActivityPub, not when it was created at least, but it's a similar idea, yep.
I mean, these are very, these ones, you know, a lot of these ones we're talking about now, they're very by the people, for the people. And let's they're just not stick like with, having a VC funded.
Let's stick with Mastodon for now. Right. Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. It's true.
A different ideology.
It's true. And I think Mastodon.
Commerce driven business, right?
Exactly. And I think Mastodon has no kind of business model at all in terms of, apart from donations. And this is what worries me about it. And I'm also worried about Signal for the same reason. Is that when something is purely based on donations, that makes it quite hard to scale and keep up with demand sometimes. And that could be by design. You know, I don't know if Mastodon wants to be the next Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
With that in mind, does it employ people or is it
very few people.
Because often in the same context, if you're relying on volunteers, right?
Yeah.
That's part of the problem again, right?
Yeah. I think my impression of Mastodon is the perception of complexity. Yes, it is a perception. It's not actually the only confusing thing about it, which has now come into other options as well, shall we say, in a minute. You have to kind of like, it's not one, you don't just join Twitter. Like you don't just join Mastodon like you join Twitter. You join an instance. But there are instances that are easy to access and are kind of open to all and et cetera, et cetera. I think my main issue I found with Mastodon is the initial experience of it. And again, this does relate somewhat to this self-hosting instances, is it can feel very filtered. And it can feel very filtered with a particular political mindset on the most public instances. I'm sure if I wanted to go and find something that felt like what Twitter is becoming on Mastodon, I could find it.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
From the initial perspective of I am a beginner to this network, I join the most obvious place, I tend to find there's a lot of similar opinions on things. This is fine, but I think one of the nice things about Twitter in the past was that you did have a mix of a discourse. And you don't have to agree with it, you don't have to like it, but I think that is important in a modern society. And I sometimes feel like Mastodon is a little too filtered in one direction sometimes. And I do tend to find as well, you're right, that there isn't a critical mass. I want to love it and I do like it. And I find, especially if I want to engage with an open source community, it's the perfect place. But for a more general conversation, you don't really find it there. It's good for particular use cases. And if you want to have a private social network for something, it's perfect for it. But for that general broadcast, I want to talk to the world, I don't think it's it. But for the specific, I want to talk to people who are super into open source video streaming, perfect. So, yeah, I will remain on it. I am on it. I like what it represents. I love the whole Fediverse ActivityPub concept. But it definitely has its place. And that place is not a Twitter beta, shall we say. Okay, next up, let's have a look at the next alternative. Kate, what has been your experience with Threads?
I don't use it that much.
Okay, well, that says a lot.
I mean, I think that the threads being connected to
you just say that again. Instagram. You just say that again because you were moving something.
Sorry, I was just moving. Yeah. I was moving my laptop.
Okay, what has your experience been of threads?
I think I haven't really used it that much.
There's a lot, yeah.
I think the fact that it kind of takes its cues from your Instagram is part of the downside for me because unlike some journalists who do more video work or more on-screen work, I don't use Instagram for work, like as a promotional tool in the sense that I'm not posting screenshots of articles and things like that or links like a lot of some journalists do. I mean, I use Twitter for that, or I was using Twitter for that. I no longer use Twitter. So, yeah, I mean, it just really was hard to get connected and to feel connected to the work people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it, I was still seeing, you know, cats and crafts and movies stuff like
that. I sort of agree with you there, and it's – let's just have a quick bit of history. Threads is only 16 months old, July last year, but as you're very right, it is sort of based on Instagram, which has been around for a lot longer. Instagram has been around for 14 years. And so it leveraged your existing username and your existing social network. But I do agree with you. You're very right that the kind of people I want to hang out with exchanging photos are not necessarily the same people I want to hang out with exchanging discussion and discourse. Mm. I initially really liked it, but I did find, there's a little bit more of the, hey, look at me on it, which makes sense when you consider the Instagram backing, which bugs me a bit because that's not really what I'm looking for. But also I have found that it seems to, and I'm not the only one who's found this, that it is very, very algorithmic. In that, I just want to see if I can find an example here. I tend to find that if I talk about something, all I see for the next period of time is loads more discussions on that same topic. And I almost have to intentionally say something else to get it to change the algorithm. And there's...
Yeah, exactly.
I've not really found any obvious way, unless I'm missing it, to change that. Like the old versions of Twitter used to have that thing of like algorithmic versus non-algorithmic. But now I just see, are you following, liked? So maybe I could do it from following. But if I just look at for you, so now I am seeing a lot of, I don't know, I see a lot of messages about Blue Sky versus Threads. A lot of actually now it's weird that I'm picking this time to look and I'm finding it to be a bit of a mixed bag right now. But it does tend to go into a lot of rabbit holes quite easily, and it's hard to get out of them sometimes.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I also find a lot of people have found how to game this and will ask make provocative statements to get interactions. So things like, am I a Gen X or a millennial? Or the one I really got involved in the other day was, why does the new Mac Mini have a 35mm audio jack when the iPhone doesn't? And people are like, because it's a computer. It's like, oh, but we just have AirPods these days. Why is Apple inconsistent? And everyone's like, because there's different use cases. And this person just kept like such an inane conversation to have anyway. But it was just like,
I feel
like people use it as like, I have figured out how to get engagement here. I'm just going to hammer that. And you'll see lots of just like statements of, do you remember that meme of the guy sat at a stall and there's like the piece of paper that says, blah, 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 prove me I'm wrong.
It makes me
think of that. A lot of posts on Threads are like that. Like, I'm saying this thing, jump in and prove me wrong. And you can monetize it. So I haven't figured out how, but you can monetize it. So there's an incentive to just get a lot of people just being like, at you. So I do find the discourse is not, certain places it can be okay. I feel like maybe it is, maybe Threads in summary is Instagram for words. it's, you know, the old stereotype that Twitter was just pictures of people posting their lunch when actually it wasn't really. Maybe that's what thread actually is. So it's where you just throw out your kind of in passing comments that are not particularly important, but yeah, you don't go there for breaking news, maybe. I don't know. Is that your general thought or?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Absolutely. I think it's just people's attention is already diverted enough.
Yeah.
You know, that they want. I'm not sure the people that use Twitter for all of the people that are leaving Twitter are going to go back to something else. So,
this is a very good point we can sort of wrap up with. But let's move on to the last one and the one that kind of sparked this conversation. And it sort of relates to something you said in passing a moment ago, that I think a lot of this was sparked in the journalist sphere and has prompted a lot of people to suddenly jump to Blue Sky, was that The Guardian shut down their official Twitter accounts. And I think largely moved to Blue Sky. Yeah?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think a lot of, and I think the election, it was election.
Yeah, I think it was like well. One thing led to another. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to give a quick summary of Blue Sky, it is founded in 2019 within Twitter. And this is where I say Jack Dorsey was about to come back because Jack Dorsey was involved in, and it looks and feels a lot like old Twitter, to be honest with you. It even
it does actually.
Layout, fonts, colors, it's very, very similar. If Elon Musk wanted to, he could probably sue them. And then 2021, independently. So it's somewhere in the middle of the new generation, shall we say. It was a research – it's weird it says it was a research project in Twitter. It's like a research project into,
that's interesting.
Into what exactly? Because wasn't Twitter? But it is semi-federated in the Mastodon sense. I lose track of if and when they have actually rolled out those features yet.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
I'm not completely sure either because on the Wikipedia page it says see also ActivityPub, but I don't actually see any specific mentions of them using it. But this is generally been spoken about as being on the roadmap, that they will be somewhat federated at some point in some way. And so is Threads. Threads is the same. So they will be like a big commercial interaction with the Mastodon world. And many have argued that, especially with Threads, if this happened, the Mastodon infrastructure would actually struggle to cope in some ways. But so what has your experience been of Blue Sky, Kate? And I'm gathering probably you, like me, have suddenly received a lot of follows in the past couple of days.
Yeah, what's that?
When did you create your profile out of interest? Because I've had mine for a little while and nothing much happened.
And I had like 10 people.
Yeah, nothing much happened for a while and then suddenly it's picked up. So
yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of us were looking for a home because I do actually use, you know, I was actually using Twitter for work, particularly if I was looking for commentary on something.
Yep.
I would, for example, it might be, let's just say for sake of argument, a piece of EU legislation around startups, right? So I would look on LinkedIn and I would look on Twitter.
Yep.
And the reason I would do that rather than contact, you know, 20 people is time.
Yeah.
You know? Because you're getting those, you know, real-time opinions that people are probably giving freely without giving you their edited version in an interview.
Yep. Yep. And how
have, what's the term, pulse check?
How have you found it? There was a comment on a recent podcast I listened to that all of these recent alternatives to Twitter have gone through the same kind of process in that they start, maybe no one really pays any attention, and then something motivates a bunch of people to move. They spend 2 weeks going, wow, this place is amazing. Mm. Everybody comes and then they go dead again. So
I think as well, the problem with this stuff is you have to sustain it. Yeah. You have to post often. You know, you have to do all those things that a lot of us stopped doing when Twitter became in my own personal opinion, a dumpster fire, you know. Yeah. I stopped posting like work links, like, you know, here's an article I wrote about X, you know, about blah, because it just, all I was getting was, you know, pro-life stuff and nudes and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
And so now I have to kind of, now I'm like, well, now I have to make an effort to draft those posts again.
Yeah.
Write them and link to them, you know. It's not a lot of work.
Yeah. It's still
it's a task you have to do in a busy day for a lot of us.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, maybe Buffer or something, or what have you.
Let me come to that in a second, because I was actually, okay. You just made me even think about this just as you were saying it, and I wanted to come back to that. But I think I feel like my general summary of this whole conversation was Twitter of its time, like sort of 10-ish to 6-ish years ago, and that kind of nature of the broadcast, hello world, internet, is just not really a thing anymore. People like us kind of keep looking for those alternatives because that's what we remember. Yeah. But it's like people like us going to watch reunions of bands from the 90s. Like,
100%.
Just because they exist doesn't mean anyone cares apart from us.
we could discuss in a different podcast and even bring some people in. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people now talking about, you know, social apps around video.
Mm.
For example.
Well, they've existed for a while already as well.
Yeah, I know, but new ones. Yeah. Like they're still, we still get pictures for them regularly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the nexus between video and in-person sort of and things like that. So, you know, I think there's still this big space where people want connection and people want to, you know, join forces with other people and feel like they matter and that other people hear them, I guess, in some respects. And I think a world where people are more fragmented and people are more, you know, some people are working from home where they're not seeing people daily to have these conversations that you might have down at the pub or in a social group of some sort.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to dismiss a lot of this stuff, whether it's the video or it's this or something else. But you know, for a lot of people, I'm not talking about any of the work stuff, but for some people, there is a genuine value. Being digital friends.
I just sort of feel like a lot of these communities move to things like Discord servers and stuff like that instead.
Yeah, totally.
So we'll find out, I suppose. Yeah. We'll see.
Particularly as a lot of people work remotely.
Yeah. Maybe Blue Sky is the new place, remains to be seen. But in answer to your question, so there's a quick barometer of where these networks are at. I'll have a look at Buffer, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
You can post to Twitter, Mastodon, LinkedIn, Threads, Blue Sky. So they've got pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
There is a very nice Mac OS and iOS app called Croissant, which multi-posts to Blue Sky, Mastodon, Threads, not Twitter at all. And Hootsuite, which I think is still going, publishes to...
I forgot about Hootsuite.
Yeah, publishes to Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, Threads. So slightly behind Buffer.
Yeah.
So there we go. I don't know. I'm not sure how many of these will be successful. I'm not sure how many of these people want to be successful outside of people like us. We will see. I think I will remain on all of them for the time being. So perhaps this is a perfect segue to wrap up, Kate.
Yes.
How can people find you on Blue Sky?
It's very simple. It's my name. Kate Lawrence.
All one word?
One word, combined letters.
Yeah.
And then it's blue sky.social.
How could people find you on Mastodon? If they can.
It's been a while.
How could people find you on Threads? If they can.
Kate M. Lawrence.
Okay.
And I'm on LinkedIn. Like, just put my name in one of them. It'll come up somewhere.
Yep.
Maybe not all of them, but.
You know. And I am Chris Chinchilla on all of them, apart from Twitter, because I was too late on Twitter, where I'm Chris Chinch.
Someone stole your name.
I don't know. I can't even remember now. Oh, maybe it was too long at the time. I can't remember. There was a reason I couldn't get it at the time. Yes. And just look up chrischinchilla.com. So, Kate, if people want to find you in person, I think you are at your last event of the year, so I think people are too late to find you in person. Yep.
That's me knocking the table.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm at Slush this week in Helsinki.
I have one more. I will be at API Days and associated events in the first week of December, 3rd to the 5th of December in Paris. So any of my more technical listeners, if you happen to be listening and going to be at any one of those co-located events, I will be there. I am doing a talk on using AI in APIs. I still am yet to decide what that means. And I apologize. I noticed every time I've laughed, I have distorted the audio. So,
really?
Kate, it was very nice to talk to you on this cozy winter's evening in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yes, it's very nice. I'm going to go out and find some gin in a can.
Excellent. I'm going to have some dinner and then go to the movies. So I will talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Thank you very much for joining me.
Have a nice day, Bron. Kate. Or a nice evening.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Scheller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianscheller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianscheller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.